Louise McSharry on 2FM.
But first, it is time for How to Be an Adult. And if you are a new listener, or maybe you're up early for the first time in ages, How to Be an Adult is a slot we do every week where basically we talk about the things that maybe you just haven't picked up along the way and you feel like you should have at this stage, but it's kind of too late to ask. Like those conversations where someone has told you their name twice already and you still haven't heard it properly and you feel like you should know, but you just can't ask again. We're trying to bridge that gap. And today we are going to talk about our sexual health, because it is a conversation that's very important and lots of people will have been I was going to say abstaining from sex, but it wasn't really a voluntary decision, was it? Lots of people were involuntarily celibate over the course of the last 18 months, and hopefully things are getting back to normal as people are vaccinated and it's safe to start physically interacting with other people. So we thought it was a good time to talk about sexual health. And today we have Dr. Amy Morgan from Bryanstown Medical in Drogheda to chat about sexual health with us. Hello, Amy. Sorry, Amy. I put up the wrong microphone. Hello.
Good morning.
Sorry. Good morning. I am so happy that you're back with us. It's always good to speak to you. And, you know, people are getting back out there, aren't they?
They are getting back out there. I think that they were getting out there during COVID as well, but they're definitely they're experiencing their well-deserved, hopefully their you know, their newfound freedom again. And obviously people are going to be out socializing more. So obviously there's more opportunity out there. And so, you know, I think it's very timely to have this conversation just as a refresher. Yeah. You know, because for some people it may have been they may have had a hiatus and they're looking to get back out there. And we want to make sure that people are getting back out there safely. So COVID safe, and then obviously keeping their sexual health and their well-being safe as well.
What are the biggest questions you get as a GP about sexual health?
Funnily enough, you know, there's a wide variety, and you think sometimes, as you know, in terms of a younger generation might be very well clued up and clued in and know exactly what's going on, but it's often not the case. So, you know, sometimes actually during routine consultations, like maybe something like a contraception check, people might, you know, slip something in like, oh, actually, I'm a little bit worried about maybe something like, you know, if a woman is experiencing maybe some discharge that she wasn't familiar with, in terms of a change in it, and it'll stimulate a conversation then about just her general sexual history, you know, any recent partners, anything she's concerned about. So often it can be an add-on, an adjunct to something that has, you know, been a, you know, like that they've booked a regular consultation for something else, and we'll come around to it like that. And I think there's a misconception still out there that, you know, if you have a regular partner or you don't have symptoms, there's just no possibility that you could have an STI. People are still quite shy. There's still a little bit of embarrassment around it, which is obviously natural. But, you know, I think we need to break down that kind of that barrier there, that, you know, sexual health is actually health, you know. It's an integral part of your physical health and your well-being, and you should treat it, you know, in terms of any other aspect of your health, in terms of getting a checkup. You know, you shouldn't wait for there to be a problem or something to clear itself, although it obviously that's a good time to get checked out as well. But, you know, we'd be encouraging people to be proactive. If you're sexually active, that's a good time to consider getting a checkup and just making sure everything is okay.
And when you say checkup, like, are you talking about screening for specific STIs, or are you talking about a general, like, I don't know, look at the area? Like, yes. What are we talking about?
Yeah, and often a lot of people don't know when they're sitting in my chair that, you know, like you'll get people saying, oh, I'm not prepared to have an exam. And, you know, you say, well, we might necessarily need to do that. So I suppose, you know, coming back to the things I would routinely see. So, you know, contraception checkups, you know, we'd go through, are they happy with their current form of contraception? Do they know how to take it? Are they sexually active? Do they know that their contraceptive method doesn't protect against STIs? And, you know, there are some STIs, you know, particularly when the likes of, you know, if you're talking about one of the most common ones that we would see, like chlamydia, a lot of people mightn't have symptoms, you know. In terms of a screening or a checkup, if we're talking about an STI screen, that's something that you can get done in your GP surgery. You know, you just have to ask for it effectively. Yeah. So that would be, and it's very easy to do. It's non-invasive. For a guy, it's usually a urine sample. For a girl, it would be a swab that they can actually take themselves. And then obviously, if anything turns up as being positive in those tests, then we would ask them to come back and have a wider screen, so something involving blood tests and all the rest of it. So it's nothing to actually be scared about. And obviously, you can have that done, in a combination of either attending your GP surgery, or obviously there are different STI clinics running up and down the country, albeit with different restrictions due to COVID. Yeah. But people can get further information. The HSE has a great website actually on sexual health and sexual well-being. And if they go onto that, they will find the nearest clinic that they can get further information from.
Okay, I have a few questions about what you've just said. And the first is, a swab you can do yourself. Are you're swabbing?
Yes.
Internally?
Yes, yes, huh. Yes. So it's not as scary
like
as
a
it
COVID
sounds.
Test,
so,
but for your vagina.
So effectively, yeah. So slightly different. So the whole point is to pick up the material, if there is an infection there on the actual swab, and it's sent off to the lab, and the lab will hopefully be able to then pick up the active material there if it is there, and then be able to give us a result. So usually when someone will come in to me, they have an option. In some cases it will warrant, examination by the doctor, maybe to have a look at someone's genital area to just make sure everything else looks normal, to maybe have a look at the cervix, and a swab can be taken from there. But, we can send someone while they're in the consultation room, out to the bathroom and with their swab, and they can actually test, which is actually the gold standard, actually, to take a swab from the area themselves, just what we call a lower vaginal swab, and return it to us, and we can send it off. So it's very quick and easy to do. So there shouldn't be really, a lot of people will work this up in their head. They're very nervous when they come to me. But really, we want to talk you through it, and there's nothing to be scared about.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's another thing I wanted to ask you, or just even to kind of talk about, is the fact that a lot of us still carry shame about, the parts of our body that we use for sex. And I hear it a lot in my Instagram DMs and on this show. And, when we talk about all kinds of things, whether it's waxing or seeking medical help, that people sometimes put things off because they're ashamed, or they're worried about their body being different, or their body being too big, or their body being too small. Yeah. Or, so what would you say to people who have those concerns?
Well, I'm not going to tell somebody that their concerns are invalid. I understand the reasons that people would carry that into a consultation room with me, but I would say never let that be a barrier to you actually accessing care. And if you feel that you're not accessing the care that you deserve and you need, speak up and let us know. And it goes back to the same point I think I made when I was on the program, a couple of months ago, when we were talking about cervical screening tests. We get it. We know that women, men, if they're coming in for different reasons, can be nervous when they come into us. Like you said, there can be stigma, there can be baggage there. So really it's important that we know that, and we want to make you as comfortable as possible. But I still get women coming into me, and they're, if I ask them to, if we're doing an examination, let's just say, they're still, apologizing for the fact that, oh, I didn't shave my legs today, I'm sorry, doctor. It's, and we laugh about it, but it's still there, So really, on a simple level like that, it's crazy, but it obviously is still a factor for a lot of people. But, it shouldn't be a barrier to you actually accessing care.
Yeah.
And I would say that, as GPs, we're trained, we have seen it all, we've heard it all. If we haven't heard it, educate us and tell us. So we're really receptive to trying to find the best treatment for you, taking a full history from you. Don't hold back about, if you think you've had 4 or 5 partners in the last 6 months. A lot of people are trying to, they're embarrassed about that. And they're trying to skirt around it. And really, the best way forward to get a treatment for you is to actually get it all out there.
Yeah.
Okay. So really, to be open and honest. And like I said, if you feel that you're not comfortable, tell us. And if you feel you're not getting the treatment you deserve, really educate yourself and seek an alternative opinion,
Yeah. Another question I wanted to ask you is, you mentioned there that, some people might think that if they're in a monogamous relationship long term, that they don't need to think about this stuff. But do you think that even if you're in, let's say you're not having sex at all, lots of people live and they don't have sex, or let's say you are only having sex with one person for a very long time, do you still need to be getting checked?
It depends. It depends on the person. It depends on, you know, the couple themselves. There's different factors involved. So, you know, maybe in a monogamous relationship, you might have a couple who are trying to conceive. And if you were trying to conceive and maybe there was some difficulty surrounding that, it would be part of a standard workup actually to get a form of STI screening, because we do know that there's some STIs, you know, as I've mentioned before, may not cause symptoms at the time that the person is infected with them, but can actually, you know, lie dormant and can affect issues in terms of fertility later down the track for an individual. So, you know, so it's a standard part of someone's assessment when they're going to get treatment like that. So I would say, you know, have the conversation with your partner. You know, there should be no shame or stigma. If one individual does want to get tested, that's a perfectly rational thing to do. I've often had people who maybe are 6 or 8 months into a relationship and something has come up and they've had some symptoms. We've had to screen them and a result has come back as being positive. You know, they're very embarrassed. They're fearful about what they should tell their partner. But it's important to understand that if you understand some of the natural history of these viruses, chlamydia in particular, there's other issues like, you know, genital warts, herpes, you know, your primary infection may have happened a long time ago before you were in this relationship. But due to a variety of reasons, maybe something has become activated now. So, you know, I think it is important that actually, you know, you don't discount the fact that you are and it couldn't happen to me, or I'm in a relationship, or you know it's not a reflection on you, that your result has come back positive, you know. And it is really better to actually seek this thing out and treat it if there's a problem. Most of the treatments are very straightforward, but it's really just a matter of identifying the problem. So I think it's important to have the conversation if you are in a relationship.
Okay. Well, we want to open this up to you guys listening. If you have a question for Amy, you can send it in to us. 51552 is the number to text. You can email us louise@rte.ie. We are talking to Dr. Amy Morgan today about sexual health specifically. So if you have a question along those lines, we will be back with Amy shortly with her answers. Okay, are you feeling ready to answer questions, Amy?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, we'll be back with Amy and some music from Big Pig after this.
Louise McSherry on 2FM.
Good Irish music from Big Pig. That is Joan Turnaround on 2FM. We are in the middle of How to Be an Adult, and today we are talking about sexual health with Dr. Amy Morgan, who is GP at Bryanstown. Let me get this right. Bryanstown Medical. I wasn't sure if there was a centre. Bryanstown Medical in Drogheda. And Amy, we have lots of questions for you, so we might as well get stuck straight into them if that's okay for you.
Sure.
The first one is, I'm 3 months postpartum and hoping to get back on the horse, so to speak. My sister recommended some lube to help things along. Are there any other tips?
So I suppose, yes, lube can help if you need it. So you may not need it at all. I think the most important thing for a woman to consider is how comfortable she feels. So, you know, does she feel ready to have sex? So some women don't, and that's okay. And they should really listen to their body and listen to what it's telling them. But if she sounds like she's ready and wants to get intimate again with her partner, you know, I would just tell her to go ahead and see if there's any problems. And if there is anything like discomfort or pain, you know, stop and reevaluate and think what she could do. And certainly stuff like lubricants can help with dryness, but she may not find that she has that. So usually once we would say at the 6 week check, these are things that we like to, you know, tease out with a woman. How has everything healed down there, so to speak? It depends on the type of delivery she had. But if she's feeling good and healthy and comfortable and everything feels okay to her, I would say there's no special things she needs to do, but obviously see how she gets on, and hopefully it works out okay for her. And obviously if not, she can certainly get some further help, either like something like you mentioned, lubricant, or either speak to her GP.
Okay. Next, you said, this question says, you said some tests can happen in a GP office. I'm very far from a clinic and so don't get checked often. What do I ask for when I call to get a general check?
So it can be a tricky one for people ringing because they don't, like you said, they don't actually know what to ask for. So they could, you know, they could obviously ring and, you know, obviously I know that practices are triaging calls in different ways, just in terms of COVID restrictions. But, you know, general practice is open and we want people to contact us, and particularly if they have any concerns about their health. So I would say just make the phone call and just say, actually, I just want a general checkup. And usually what will happen is, particularly in our practice, your call will be forwarded to us, one of the doctors, and we'll be able to ring you back, take a history over the phone, and we'll get an idea from what you're telling us about what you actually need. And then we can organise it to go from there. And, you know, STI tests and STI screening, you know, they're part of general health. You know, they're not a special add-on treatment, you know. So really most GP surgeries would have access to getting those tests done for you, you know.
Okay. Next one says, during lockdown, I totally lost my mojo. I love my girlfriend. I just have no interest in sex. Is this something a doctor can help me with?
Yeah, so that's, I'd say that's probably a common enough scenario with everything that's been going on. You know, definitely we know that people have had different stressors in their life, money and work, and just uncertainty about the future. So like that's not unusual. And we've actually been encountering that, you know, a fair amount actually. So I would encourage that person, whoever they are, to actually pick up the phone and make contact with their GP, because, you know, it will involve taking a history, just finding out what things were like before, has there been any changes in their life. And usually you'll find it's not always a simple thing to correct there and then, but once you tease out the issues that are involved, and it sounds like they have a very supportive partner, which is the first big step, is knowing that they have the support of their partner. You'll find that there may be just some psychological issues going on that they need some help with. It may be a case of maybe their general physical health has taken a knock as well. So if there's things that can be improved there, that's something we can identify. And, you know, obviously just in terms of a general checkup, their height, their weight, their blood pressure, if there's any, you know, additional tests that need to be done from a point of view, blood test. So yeah, no, I would definitely say, look, that's not uncommon. Don't panic. And they should make contact with their GP. And we really want to find a way to, you know, to help people get help for that particular issue. So yeah, contact with their GP.
Are libido issues generally rooted in kind of psychology, or are there physical things that can happen that would impact your libido?
A combination of both. But often you will find that, I suppose it can be a chicken and egg scenario, that, you know, if someone's libido has gone down and it's maybe causing some issues within the relationship, and that adds to the psychological impact of it. So if there was a physical issue, it's certainly not been helped by the fact you have this other added component in there as well. And then the longer it goes on as well, maybe someone's physical health can take a knock from it as well. So it can be both.
Right.
And you'll really be able to identify it when you have someone sitting in front of you or the other end of the phone, and they're able to really tell you what the problems are. And, you know, and then obviously, depending on what you feel or the issues are, come up with a plan between the doctor and the patient to make a, you know, to find a solution for it. And in most cases, most people will totally get this sorted out. You know, there is always a strategy that we can find to get things moving for them again.
Okay. Now this one says, I have herpes for years and have never taken any medication. Is this bad?
Well, I suppose there's a few things you'd want to know there. Herpes is a type of virus. It can cause a variety of things in the body, in terms of people will be familiar with things like cold sores. So that's usually caused by one type of a herpes virus. And then genital herpes or anogenital herpes, that's caused by a different type. But there is a mixture of the two, actually, and certainly some ones are becoming more prevalent than the others. So people can have the herpes virus. It can lie dormant in their system for years. It is spread in terms of genital herpes by sexual contact, so skin to skin contact, so you know, oral and penetrative sex. So if someone has active herpes and they are sexually active, they are at high risk of actually passing that on to another individual. So this person may have had a primary infection years ago and may be having flares, in which case I'd want to know why they're having repeated flares of their herpes virus, because is there something else going on in their body? Is their immune system not working the way it should be? So I think that person would need to actually make contact with their GP or their sexual health clinic, and probably is going to need a combination of an examination and get a history from them to find out what's actually going on, and just to see whether there are treatments available for your first having, if someone had a primary infection, let's just say, and they had active ulcers in the area, they would need to go on treatment. And if they're having repeated flares, there are other considerations, you know, in terms of whether they need to go on a longer term treatment to actually dampen down the immune system to stop it reacting and to stop the flares happening so frequently. So yeah, I would encourage that person to reach out and make contact with their local doctor.
Yeah, I can't help but think that if you ever have like a niggling thought in the back of your head, like, oh, maybe I wonder, should I see a doctor about that? You probably should.
Yeah, you probably should. Yeah, you really should. You should really listen to your gut on this. You know, if something is going, is that bad? Look, and there's been, you know, it comes back to the point I would make. There should be no shame or no judgment. You know, no one's going to the other end of the phone and say, you know, well, you shouldn't have been doing this. No, you know, you need to be open and honest. And like I said, we're well used to hearing a variety of different histories and people in different relationships and other things that come up. So don't be shy, you know, come forward, because obviously that's the first step. And if you have an infection that you think is active and you're sexually active, you know, you're obviously at risk of spreading that on. So, you know, that's not a good thing either.
Okay, one more question before I let you go. My smear results showed I have HPV. However, I haven't been with anyone other than my husband for almost 20 years. Why has this happened now? Does it mean my husband has been unfaithful?
Okay, so that actually comes up in the surgery a good amount, because we're getting HPV results back now with our cervical screening test. So that's been one of the relatively new additions to the screening program, is that when a woman is having her smear test taken, there will be a HPV test done on that smear test as well. And that gives us a really good amount of information on her level of risk in terms of going on to progress cervical cancer or other types of abnormalities. And HPV is one of the viruses, certain subtypes of it are highly associated with the development of cervical cancer and also actually anogenital warts. And it would be the focus of their cervical vaccine program in schools. Mm. So the HPV virus itself, it's important to know about it. It really helps the person at the other end, you know, determine how often this lady is going to need another smear test. But the good news is that someone can be infected with HPV years and years and years and years prior. So even if they've just had one partner ever in their life, they may have picked up the HPV infection from them, had no symptoms. Their partner may have had no symptoms, but it has now been flagged when they have had their smear test. Mm. So it really isn't something to worry about. It doesn't have to cause an awkward conversation at the dinner table. So so I would say, yeah, if she's really, really concerned about it and wants further information, obviously, you know, that's what her GP or a practice nurse in the GP is there to be able to talk these results through, and we're well used to doing that. But no, she shouldn't be concerned.
Don't panic. Okay, that's good. Nice to have a bit of comforting advice at the end.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Amy. That's Dr. Amy Morgan from Bryanstown Medical Center in Drogheda. Thank you so much, Amy. I hope you have a really lovely Saturday.
You too. Okay, thanks a million.
Bye. Louise McSherry on 2FM.